This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, our subject of the day is education, private schools, charter schools, public schools, funding, profiteering. And we have two of the most knowledgeable folks around. Craig Harris, if you've been reading the Arizona Republic, you can't miss a series of articles he's been doing on this subject. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And David Wells, who is the research director for the Arizona Grand Canyon Institute.
Thank you.
Scratch the Arizona Grand Canyon Institute. Most people know the Grand Canyon, Arizona, though I once was on a tour in Western China, and we were touring the Great Gorges area, and they said this is like the second biggest canyon in the world, second only to the Grand Canyon in Colorado. I think somebody looked at a map and saw Colorado River and figured it must be Colorado. Usually they say Nevada because that's – or Las Vegas is where some of the tourists go out of. That's off topic, but it just struck me. Anyway, either one of you guys, I'm going to jump in. If you could set the stage for us, explain if you would. We know what public schools are. I think we know what private schools are. They've been around for a long time. A lot of them are Catholic or religious, though not all of them. They're run entirely private. Now we fund some private schools, and we have this other kind of entity known as charter schools. Can you set the landscape for us and explain the differences between the three?
Well, sure. Charter schools have been around in Arizona since the mid-1990s. Legislation passed around 1994 that set them up. And basically, they were set up at the time, from my understanding, because district schools, traditional schools like you see in Higley or Glendale or Gilbert or Scottsdale, they weren't doing very well. So folks wanted a choice. They wanted a difference for charter schools. And so that's why they were allowed to operate and they were allowed to play by different sets of rules.
But they were at the time originally, if I'm not wrong, they were run by the public school systems, right?
They were initially at the time, although they were also set up by private and nonprofit businesses. So there was a bit of a mix.
So you had both. You had both under that umbrella. And it's my understanding that they loosened some of the rules under which they operated. I at some point, I think you didn't have to hire certified teachers.
Right. The rules are actually pretty loose. You don't have to hire certified teachers. You don't have to follow procurement rules, which is kind of an arcane term, but basically it means they don't have to bid out their services. They can hire whoever they want.
You can hire you can hire your nephew.
You can hire your brother.
At a no-bid basis,
right.
At an inflated price or
whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
And they don't have to follow conflict of interest law. So as you said, you could hire a relative or a brother or whatever you want. Mm-hmm. The rules that are very stringent for district schools do not apply to charter schools. Mm-hmm. And the reason was to give them freedom so they could operate. Mm-hmm. But what we have seen has morphed is that freedom has allowed a great deal of profiteering by certain individuals who run certain charter schools.
And you've been writing a series of articles about that. My summary of all of it is seemed to be a license to steal.
Well, I'll let you say that. I'm not going to say
this. Well, I see somebody, you know, getting an $8 million salary. I see somebody else selling the schools for, you know, again, multiple millions of dollars. Somebody's making a lot of money there. And the mechanism by which they're doing it is not private money, but they're collecting money from the state, right? I mean, you have a kid in a charter school, you get, and David has written about, how much do you get if you get somebody in a charter school?
Today, a regular education child in a charter school gets about $7,000, and it all comes from the general fund. District schools, it depends on how wealthy your district is, how much of it's funded by local property taxes, and how much is from the state. But the base funding for charters is higher because they can't do bonding and things like that, which district schools can do.
So they can argue that that's a reasonable distribution. So,
well, charters will argue that they also they can't get local property taxes. So the legislature has changed the rules to make it a higher funding mechanism for charter schools. They get up to $2,000 more per kid. So if you look at the state general fund, there's roughly a million plus kids in public schools in Arizona. Charter schools compose or comprise about 16-17% of the population. They get 20+% of the funding. The funding is not proportionate to their enrollment. Charter schools will also argue, well, we get less federal dollars. Well, the reason they get less federal dollars is because they don't have as many special ed kids or English language learner kids. Who are much more expensive, and that's why you get the federal funds. So the argument goes back and forth who gets more money, but I've had a lot of district schools say, we will take the funding for charter schools any day of the week and not make us have to go to our local voters to get property taxes.
So, David, you with the Grand Canyon Institute, you did a study about the relative cost of state funding for private schools and public schools. Talk about that.
Right. And we used charter schools as a comparison for that, because and we used 2015, 2016 data. So that was before Red for Ed and all that thing. So at that time, the amount of money that a regular education child in charter schools received was about $6,000.
And that's not cherry picked. Usually the data is not really fully available for the current year. Right?
So. No. And what we needed to do is be able to actually get into the data for the actual private school enrollment census, which only happens every 2 years, as well as we also need to get into the tax credit data, which also we have the most recent data is 2015, 2016. But we found that when we tried to estimate the number of kids who were in private schools, which are schools that are completely private, they don't have to follow any kind of state curricular guidelines. They're allowed to discriminate against who can come into the school. Charter schools are not allowed to do that. That the state had about 13,000 students who were in private schools due to the subsidy programs, and it was costing us about $10,700 per child.
Now that's taking, I think you've got a factor in there that a lot of the kids in those private schools would have been there anyway.
Right.
And so if the state allocates money to those kids, that's an increased cost to the state, right? Because the only ones where there's an offsetting savings is when you subsidize a kid who would have been in a public school to go to a private school, presumably the school district saves some money.
That's right. And so in 2015, 2016, there were about 46,500 kids in private schools. And we're estimating about 13,000, a little over that, were in the schools because of the subsidy programs. And just to give people sort of a broad...
It's about a quarter, right? To make sure people understand... About a quarter of the kids who get state subsidies to go to private school are there because of the subsidies. Three quarters would have gone anyway, is what your study shows.
Yeah, that's essentially what our study's showing. And to give people without a stats background to sort of get an idea, when they started this program, there were about 44,000 children in private schools. And today it's just over 46,000 students in private schools. So you can see that the enrollment just hasn't been growing.
And that's over what period of time?
That's going from 1999-2000 till the present day.
Okay.
So that's technically 2015-16. So about almost 20 years.
And that's about a 5% modest increase. Probably the public school population is going up more than
right.
that.
And because one of the substitutes is this charter schools, the very ones that we talk about. So for instance, Basis is a charter school, as is Ben Franklin. And so a parent who decides to send their child to a charter school, a lot of them decide to do that instead of private school. So we actually have competing policies in Arizona.
I could see that if you're, and we're going to break in just a second, but if you say you're not happy with the local public school, you might look at private. You might look at charter. They're competitive in that sense, in the sense that neither is a public school.
Right.
We'll be back with David Wells and Arizona Republic reporter Craig Harris in just a minute and continue this discussion.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back with Craig Harris, Arizona Republic reporter. He's been doing a lot of really terrific work on education. David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute completed a study on education funding in the state. By the way, just a little heads up, stick around to the end of the segment. We have dispensed with the normal exit music, which I hold dear because I wrote and arranged it. But you can listen to the words. They'll speak for themselves. There's a little bit of editorial content that's related to the topic. So stick around in 8 minutes and you'll hear that. I want to start with you, Craig. I wonder if you could summarize for us a series of articles you've been writing about. There's a lot of people making a lot of money in the education business. How are they doing it?
Well, absolutely. The reason they're doing it is because it's perfectly legal of what's going on. The legislature has created laws that are very lax on the oversight for charter schools. And so charter school operators have been able to use those laws to – in a lot of ways, enrich themselves. You have a situation with Primavera, and if you drive through any of the freeways in Phoenix, you're going to see there are billboards around. The CEO of Primavera took about $8.8 million to pay himself. At the same time, his school had a 49% dropout rate. Mm-hmm. He spends the majority on his funds for himself and also to buy software from a company that he owns. And he spends very little money overall on teachers. I mean, his teachers are actually paid well compared to other teachers.
But he has a 250-to-1 teacher ratio or something?
Well,
like that?
They have argued about that number. It depends on what number you use. They like to market themselves as having 20 to 22,000 kids. So if you take the number of kids they say they have and divide it by the number of teachers, that puts their ratio at about 214-to-1. Mm-hmm. They will argue that, well, really, at any one time, we only have 6,000 kids. So that brings the ratio down to 70-ish-to-1. Mm-hmm. But they say, no. We really have other teachers that we haven't reported to the state, so we think it's 35-to-1. But they've never provided any records or documents to alter the information they actually provided to the state to show that they have an incredibly high student-to-teacher ratio.
And there's no regulation on that, is there? I mean, you can have whatever ratio you can get away with.
You can have whatever ratio you want. Mm-hmm. And if you look at their test scores, they are well below the state average for math, for science, mm-hmm. for English. Now, they will come back and argue and say, well, look, we're an alternative school. Well, yeah, that's true, but a lot of other alternative schools are far outperforming BASIS. Mm-hmm. Primavera. Yeah. I stand corrected. Yeah. They're far outperforming Primavera, and even other online schools. There's 19 other online schools in the state, and their dropout rate is incredibly lower, and they hire a lot more teachers.
Mm-hmm. I will say this as a editorial and data analytical comment on the whole issue of any kind of scores on standardized tests. It is a mistake to look at the scores in the abstract. What you have to do, to be fair, is to look at the change in the scores with the same students. BASIS is off the charts in a positive direction by every measure. But they also start out with the best students in the state of Arizona.
Well, absolutely.
And so the fact that they perform very well, what you haven't done is isolate the causality of the influence on the school. Give me a bunch of high-performing kids at the beginning of the year. I guarantee you they will be high-performing at the end of the year.
Well, absolutely. And I think that you're right. BASIS has done a remarkable job, and they get a lot of high test scores. They get a lot of accolades from U.S. News and World Report. But they have, and this is going to date me a little bit, they have basically the Michael Jordans and the Wayne Gretzkys of the world in their classrooms of all-star students who are in. And the other thing about BASIS is they have a 40% dropout rate from kids who go from 8th grade to 9th grade.
I've interviewed BASIS student at great detail about what causes that. In the end of the 8th grade, they sit you down and they tell you, you are going to have a backbreaking course load here. You're going to be expected to do upteen hours of homework, and they tell you what you are in for. It will be excruciating and intense. And so even you're starting out with high-performing students, you basically scare away any student who is not willing to work their tail off. So you're getting not only high performers, but ones that are willing to do anything in order to succeed, you know. This is a group of students in that classroom that any teacher would die to have.
Yeah, they're very, I mean, and for the most part, and then to their credit, they opened a school in South Phoenix, which has a lot of low demographics, but overall, their overall student population is very affluent, very, very white, or also very Asian. And
but in fairness, and I'm intrigued by, to watch what will happen in South Phoenix, because if even within South Phoenix, if you end up pulling, they can all be poor, they can all be minority, but if you're getting the kids who have parents that are highly motivated, and there are lots of parents from lower income, lower education schools where the parents are highly motivated and will stick on their kids and not take anything less from full effort from them, you can have the same kind of self-selection take place. In other words, it's not just the demographic. It is primarily the attitude of the people that are, if you get within those lower income communities, you can still skim the cream.
Well, yeah, and I wanted to elaborate a little bit more when I made the comment about Asians. I'm making that point as a compliment. There is a very high value for education in the Asian community. And I was adopted by an Asian mother, and there was no way in the world my brother and I were going to bring anything less home than A's. And so we knew how hard we had to perform when we were growing up. And that's just a culture that very much values education. And so it's a good thing to have a lot of Asian families who are in BASIS because they're very prominent and they support public education. They want their kids to do well.
I have seen that over and over. And you'll see Asian parents in particular, they make $100,000 a year and they'll pay $60,000 in private school tuition. Yeah. So you'll get editorial music, and we will return in just a moment in the think tank. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around in. In the skies with all the picking, I don't care what goes on around. In life, there's something lurking.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back discussing education funding, education policy, how we fund our schools, charter schools, and the like with David Wells of the Grand Canyon Institute that has done a study on this matter, and Craig Harris, whose reportage has been all over the Arizona Republic for weeks now, talking about some of the more outrageous instances of, let's put it this way. Some people are making a lot of money in the school business, or as a friend of mine once referred to it as the private school racket. He actually described it as primarily a real estate scam. But that's, by the way, one of the ways you make the money. The school's nonprofit, but you rent out the facility to yourself or your uncle or something like that at an inflated price. Just because an institute is nonprofit doesn't mean you can't make a lot of money at it. But to move off of that just a little bit, David, in the break, we were discussing some of the other studies. In addition to yours, you were talking about a Goldwater study, which if anything would come from, one would think, from the other side of the aisle here. Talk to us about that and anything else related.
Yeah, because we're talking about educational outcomes, and one of the challenges is to try to measure equivalent students.
And the thing that's lost. When you say our students are overperforming, the thing I want to know is what did they start out with at? And that is very, very hard to get because of the way it's set up. And the only way I think you get, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but unless you get a measure of those specific students in September and can take it again in June, you don't know really what happened. You don't know how much is the self-selection of the student. And look at all the so-called failing schools. They started out with students that were troubled the day they started there. So it's unfair to recognize either the high or the low performing schools unless you've got an adequate before measure. Sorry.
Yeah. And so the challenges of the academic studies is usually the connection is that they don't let us know what the schools are. But there were two studies. One was from the Stanford, and it's affiliated with the Hoover Institute with the Center on Educational Outcomes, which did a nationwide look at charter schools. And generally there are four charter schools, but they found
it's a Hoover. That's a conservative Republican think tank.
And generally, they found that charters in Arizona underperformed, and online charters were absolutely dreadful nationwide, but including in Arizona. Goldwater Institute was concerned that this kind of study, this study came out about 6 years ago, was concerned that this would get traction. So they hired the Brookings Institute to do their own study. The Brookings Institute also found that
who hired the Brookings Institute?
The Goldwater Institute did.
Wow.
They hired.
Let's just pause for a minute. That boggles my mind. The Goldwater Institute is a conservative Republican. Brookings is probably their Democratic equivalent.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, Brookings on education choice is a. Mm-hmm. They're for choice, so it was, but it was still an interesting marriage. And Brookings looked at the test scores from kids from third to eighth grade and looked for how long they'd been in charters. Anyway, they also found that as a whole, with some exceptions, that the charter sector underperformed compared to equivalent students in district schools, and that the online sector was really horrible. Now, I don't think the Goldwater Institute liked that result, so we've given it more publicity than I think the Goldwater Institute, who paid for the study, ever did. But what we'd really would be nice to do is have a more recent study, because the data for all these studies is now 6 to 8 years old, and it'd be really nice to see that. But that's what you really need to do. And the Department of Education actually didn't cooperate very well with Brookings in terms of providing student data. So they had a real challenge with that.
And I would make the point in listening to that as a sector it underperforms, that can mask individual differences. You can have individual charter schools that are doing very well and others that are doing abysmally.
Right.
I mean, as with public schools.
So, but when I put things together from Craig's reporting about how Primavera is doing in comparison to other online schools, and the knowledge that I know that the online sector is highly questionable in their outcomes, it suggests to me that in that data that Primavera was one of the worst performing online schools. That's my conjecture. But again, I can't prove it, but that's most likely the truth.
David, can you explain to us how private school subsidies work?
Sure.
How do you get public money into private schools?
There are two ways in Arizona. One, most of the money comes through tax credits. Tax credits was a legislation passed by the legislature back in 1997, so shortly after charter schools began in Arizona. And today, individuals can deduct, if you're a married couple, up to about $2,200 for the regular tax credit as well as what
they call. Wait a minute. I don't think you mean deduct, do you?
Well, it's a dollar for dollar.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
A deduction, yes. If I owe the state $10,000 in Arizona taxes, and I make, you're saying there's a $2,200 limit?
For a married couple and $1,100 for a single.
Okay.
Yes.
And I make a contribution, a married couple, of $2,200 to a private school, my tax bill goes down by $2,200. In other words, it didn't cost me a nickel.
Actually,
or to put it another way, it's really state money. It's money that would have gone to the state. Now it goes directly to the school. It depletes that money dollar for dollar from the state. To me, that's a legal ruse. It's really a direct state subsidy.
It's even better than that. Yeah. Because you not only do you get a deducted dollar for dollar to a tuition, state tuition tax organization, but you also get to deduct it from your federal taxes. Mm-hmm. So effectively, you make interest. So whatever money you would have paid on that in federal taxes, you actually sort of get back. So people actually would make more money by doing this.
So I'm in the 30% federal tax bracket. It's a deduction, not a credit. So I get the $2,200 knocked off my Arizona taxes. I get about $700 knocked off of my federal taxes. I'm $700 richer. The state of Arizona is $2,200 poorer, and that money went to a private school.
Yes, so it's been a pretty good, lucrative thing for people doing that,
They had some instances where parents were funding their own school's tuition. I think they've cracked down on that. Is that correct?
Sort of and sort of not. What parents can do is like, I would like my money to go to, you can't save for your own kid, right. But you can talk to somebody else's parents, say, I'd like my money to go to your kid, and could you say you'd like to have my money go to...
I've seen Facebook parents postings where parents are trying to match up. Basically, it's an evasion.
And then,
I will fund your kid, you will fund right. my kid. It's the same as if I funded
right.
my own
and kid. The tuition tax organization doesn't have to follow those things, but mm-hmm. And there is actually no official tracking of this. What we do know is that there are actually now more scholarships handed out than there actually are kids in private schools. So we know that a lot of children are receiving multiple scholarships. We don't track how much goes to any individual student, so we actually don't know how much
okay.
they are.
So you make the contribution, your uncle makes a contribution, your brother makes a contribution.
So essentially tax dollars end up paying for your tuition. And then on top of that, there's a corporate tax, which is up to private school tuition organizations. And that's the limit on that is now up to $81 million. I think the limit goes up by 20% every year.
You do some math. That is a radical escalation. I mean, if 20% a year, that compounds pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. It goes fast. Because I said when we used 2015-16 data, the limit was about a little over $60
million. And is that 20% recomputed on the higher base?
I don't know if you mean by the higher base, but it's
For example, yeah. If I'm at 100 and I go to 120,
yes.
the next year I can go not to 140, but to about 144.
That's right. That's
okay.
How it works.
In other words, at 20% a year, it doubles in 4 years, not five.
Yes. So that's the way it's set up. So that's one part of it.
Quick before I get to that, mm-hmm. how much is that total state budget's about $10 billion. How much is that taking out?
So altogether, that's taking out almost $140 million. That was in 2015-16. It's probably higher now.
I think total state funding is about $1 billion. So in round numbers, that's about 14% of the education budget of the state. Is that in round numbers?
Yeah, out of a billion, there's more than $1 billion going to. So it's less than that. But again, but it's a mm-hmm. relatively really small number of kids mm-hmm. That are actually ultimately benefiting from that. And on top of that is the thing related to Prop 305, which is the Empowerment Scholarship Account vouchers, which we've added in the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's the other way. Go ahead and explain.
Yes.
That.
So initially that was for a very specialized population, mostly kids who were going to schools that were graded D or F, mm-hmm. Children of veterans, or if you were in the foster care system, as well as kids who had special needs or disabled. And the Republic has reported that the disabled part of that has primarily gone to wealthier families.
Which is not the image of who gets it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's a small portion of that that's going to regular ed kids, and Prop 305 would expand eligibility to that to every student.
To everybody.
Subject to enrollment caps. Yes.
And explain how that works the same way. Is that still a credit?
So that's not a tax credit. That's actually state tax dollars. There's a gift clause in the Constitution of Arizona, which
says that the state can't give money to a private entity.
Yeah. So instead, we give it to the tuition organizations for the tax credits. And if for this case, the state gives it technically to the parent, and the parent then gives it to the private
okay.
school, and then we do an audit to make sure that's actually
still
what
state money going to schools.
Right.
You need a legal ruse.
And during the time we were looking at this, they were receiving 90% of what charter schools received. That was the amount of mm-hmm. a voucher for a regular education student. Prop 305 changes that a little bit, but I don't want to get too much into the details of that. But Prop 305 will allow that to be a little bit higher in some cases for mm-hmm. low-income families, and in some cases it might be a little bit lower.
Okay. We will be – and how much – we'll be back in a minute, but just one last – how much money is involved in that particular program?
So that during the time when we were looking at regular education kids yeah. only, it was only about $4 or $5 million.
That's not small. The total empowerment scholarships altogether
are quite a bit higher than that. I don't have that figure right in front okay. of me, but it would okay. be many fold higher than that.
Okay. We'll be back discussing education funding, private and charter schools in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with David Wells, the Grand Canyon Institute, and a reporter, Arizona Republic reporter Craig Harris, been writing some really staggering articles on the subject of education funding and where some of our tax dollars have been going. Earlier in the kind of the first segment, you described some of the issues with the Primavera online school. I don't want to leave people with the impression that this is just one institution that got strays. There's others, and you've written about several. I wonder if you could walk us through a few of those.
Sure, absolutely. Recently, we wrote about State Representative Eddie Farnsworth, who is out in Gilbert, and he owns a small chain of charter schools called Ben Franklin. He's owned those schools since almost when the charter school industry began in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And
is he in the legislature?
He's in the legislature now. He's running for the Senate now because he's termed out of the House. He's going to try to run for the Senate out in Gilbert.
And that's the big evasion that when they put in term limits, they give you an eight-year limit, but they allowed you to go from House to Senate. I think in back.
He's gone back and forth, and he's also been out for a little bit one time when he lost. But anyway, he basically ran his schools as a private entity. He built up shareholder equity. He's got up almost $4 million.
So that's a private. You mean this is a private for-profit school?
It is a private for-profit school funded entirely with state tax dollars. He gets about $20 million a year to operate his schools. Mm-hmm. And so he also owns a related real estate business. And so the schools paid leases to his real estate company that owned the schools. He owns both companies. Mm-hmm. So he was paying himself on the lease.
And this is one of those deals where they don't have to do competitive bid or – anything, right?
Absolutely not.
So you can rent to your right hand can rent to your left hand at whatever you want. So the upshot of, even if it was nonprofit, you can get the money out that way.
Well, but it was for profit.
I know it was for profit. I'm saying that you could do that even with a nonprofit, right?
Correct.
You're running this so-called nonprofit. You rent it out to yourself at an inflated rate. You can take out as much money as you want.
Right. Now, what he's doing now is he wants to switch it to he went to the charter board and he wants to switch it to a nonprofit. So he put three friends of his on the nonprofit Benjamin Franklin board. Mm-hmm. They're going to then pay for his schools. They're going to buy them at the current fair market value. Even though they might be 5, 10, 15 years old, they're going to now rebuy the schools at the current fair market value. So based on the records he submitted to the charter board, he will make either $12 million or $30 million. Now, where's the difference? Well, it depends on what audit you use, basically on the financial records he submitted in 2016 or in 2017. At a recent charter board hearing, I approached Representative Farnsworth and I said, hey, look, I want to make sure I'm factually correct. What is your profit going to be? Is it 12 or is it 30? Because there's a big delta. He said to me, it's none of your business. He goes, you can look at the audits and make your own conclusion. And I said, well, I want to make sure I'm accurate. And I said, you know, when you're in the legislature, I've covered hearings where you grill people on transparency and accuracy. And he said, I'm not accountable to you. I'm here as a private citizen. I'm not here as a legislator. And so he basically said, write whatever you want to write, and I'm not going to help you. And so I said, OK, then I'm going to use the delta. I'm going to report that it could be $12 million at the low end or $30 million at the high end. And that's what we ran with. And there's been no call for a correction or no complaint about that because those are his numbers. And the top number, what he sold it for or what he plans to sell for, was the projected sales price he gave to the charter board. Now, when he was before the charter board, he also said, well, we're going to get an appraisal. And that may not be the accurate number either, but the appraisal will be used by his friends that he put on the nonprofit board to buy the schools from him. So there's no independent oversight at all with these schools out in East Valley with Mr. Farnsworth.
And just to add, that's the kind of thing that we need the charter board more to vet these kinds of sales, because if the school in this case is sold for more than it's worth, what's going to ultimately happen is the bondholders, because he's going to take out a loan, are going to get paid, but the dollars may not go into the classroom, because we've seen schools like Starshine, which is one of the ones that closed last year, where they were in so much debt they declared bankruptcy, but before they declared bankruptcy, only 25 cents out of the dollar was going going into the classroom. And that's not good for kids. And that's probably part of the kind of the oversight that we want to see. We know of another Montessori school that where the owner overpaid for it. And as a consequence, even though Montessori would be a great service to that community, we think that school is going to close.
And we saw a similar situation with American Leadership Academy out in Gilbert in the East Valley in Queen Creek, where the owner, Glenn Way, took out loans to build the schools, which were backed by the American Leadership Academy. He then bought the land. He then bought the schools. Then he went and got them appraised, and then he sold the schools at the increased value to the nonprofit that he started. And we calculated at the Republic that he made $32 to $34 million of profit. And Glenn said, no, Craig, that's not right. I only made $18 million of profit by selling schools to my own nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask both of you. You both looked at this whole issue. What's the fix? I think people listen to this. They're swimming in numbers. People are walking out with a lot of numbers. I saw one of your pieces. One of the schools that had a stratospheric CEO pay were paying their teachers. Arizona teachers already, we know, paid among the lowest in the country. They were paying their teachers $8,000 a year less than the average in Arizona. And a high CEO, people look at that, I think, and say, it's not right. What's the fix?
Well, let me add one thing. Charter schools, on average, have twice as high as a percentage for administrative costs than district schools. At the same time, they pay their teachers $8,000 to $10,000 less on average than district schools. And district schools are already among the worst in the country. The only way it gets changed is by electing people who want to see things that are different. Otherwise, everything that has happened that we've written about at the Arizona Republic and AZ Central is absolutely legal. So the only way you change it is by changing the people who are in the legislature or who are running statewide offices.
Yeah, which is why it was wonderful that Attorney General Mark Brnovich got excited or got interested in this issue as Attorney General. But because they're not breaking the law for the most part now, he can't do anything about it. He could investigate individual cases and maybe find some technical things. But it's not like what happened in Scottsdale where the CFO, you know, she broke the law because she's worked for a district school. If she did that for a charter school, she'd have been all within the law and it wouldn't have been a problem at all. And so we need to change the laws. And we need to change them really clearly because one of the things we found in working with the charter board, who has become increasingly receptive to that, they can now close charters for financial reasons, but they need to have clear reasons why they're doing it. They can't be discretionary because they end up in court and they need to be able to defend themselves in court.
Who's the charter board and how do you get on the charter board?
The charter board is appointed by the governor. And so the charter board has 11 members right now. One of the positions is the state school superintendent. So
that's elected. Okay.
That's Diane Douglas. She lost her primary. She'll be out. So there'll be one new member after the election.
What about the other 10?
They're all appointed by the governor. And the board chairwoman, Kathy Sensman, she was appointed by Governor Brewer, and she's a holdover. So not hangover. Excuse me. I stand corrected. So all the positions on the charter board, like most other regulatory boards, are appointed by the governor. So it's up to the governor
My question is, you've been around this charter board. Are they folks who are inclined to regulate appropriately, or are they turning a blind eye? What's your sense of who this board is?
I think the most recent session, there were a couple charter board members who were asking some very tough questions. Mm-hmm. But the board is stacked and filled with charter school owners and charter school advocates.
Oh, thank you very much. By the way, Eddie Farnsworth wants to come on here. He's welcome. Will you come on with him?
Absolutely.
I would just open invitation, Eddie. Want to come on the think tank? We got a spot for you. Thank you, David Wells. Thank you, Craig Harris. This issue is not over for sure. It will be dealt with in November in some fashion. We will follow that. And if you want to listen to podcast, you can go to ktar.com. All of our shows are archived as well as they are on my personal site, michaelneal.org. See you next week in the Think Tank.